Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. It is Niall and Andrea Cleary here. Our roving reporter, Andrea Cleary, is in the building, the virtual building, podcast building. How are you?
I'm hot. I'm very
lovely.
Warm.
Yes, it is warm, everybody. You're feeling it. I'm feeling it. You are feeling it through the headphones, I'm sure. It's also hard to wear headphones when it's hot like this. It's hot.
I was on two buses today and I sat on the sunny side of the bus both times because the shady side of the bus was all taken up and I thought I was going to melt.
Absolute melter.
It was horrendous.
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah,
that was me.
We'll maybe talk about hot gig, maybe not hot stuff that's happening. But yeah, this episode we're going to be talking about Andrea Goes to Slane. This is the Andrea Goes to Slane episode. And a few other bits too. So I was away last week, hence no podcast, and had a lovely time in Santorini and have loads of tips for anyone who wants to go to Santorini. A great place, one of those great adult playground kind of lovely natural places to go have a holiday. If you want to sit on a beach, you can. If you want to explore towns, you can. Lovely, lovely, lovely. 10 out of 10 for me. Feeling good. Came back to this absolutely sweltering heat. Great. Okay, but what about you? What about you? I know there was a lot of lead up in terms of what was coming on and what was happening with Slane. I know you don't go to a lot of big gigs, so you kind of applied your journalistic principles to the preparation and preview of Harry Styles at Slane Castle. So tell me, Where do you start? You did a couple of articles, first of all, on your Substack.
Yes, I did. Slane was announced back, last year, and it was Harry Styles and myself and my friend Nadia basically became friends because she introduced me to, One Direction was a big part of our sort of early friendship. So we were we have to go. So we got our tickets, Gen Pop tickets, £97 each. It's not cheap, but we did it. and I honestly bought them just not thinking about the fact that it was Slane. Obviously I knew it was going to be Slane. I knew what Slane meant in terms of the legacy of it here in this
country. But you hadn't been before.
Its place. No, never been before. I'd seen footage of I've seen pictures of Queen playing. I've seen footage of Robbie. And anytime I've ever looked at footage like that, I've thought, well, that looks like a fucking nightmare. That looks horrendous. And you couldn't pay me enough money to be in the middle of all that. And yet, Harry Styles comes along and I decide to go to Slane. But like I said, not really thinking about like the size of the crowd, like nothing like that, was just so tunnel vision towards being in the same area as Harry Styles. You've been to Slane,
I was gonna I'll tell you what the gigs were later, but I was there in 1998 when I was 16 and in 2001. I think they're the right years to go to Slane. I certainly would take me a lot to go back there again this year or in any time in the near future. I've not been since 2001. So yes. So I was kind of like with trepidation.
Can you
reveal
what the act were?
Yes, I can tell you. So in 1998 I went to see the full lineup is I'll start from the start with 1998. It was Finley Quay, Junkster, James of Sit Down fame, the Seahorses featuring John Squires from Stone Roses, Robbie Williams doing Millennium and his big like solo kind of arrival next year. He came back in 1999 and actually headlined the whole thing. Special guests.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Niall. It's speaking of special guests, Harry is currently bringing me an ice cream. So I just wanted to explain what the noise was. Thank you. Everyone say thank you,
Harry.
Harry.
Sorry. Special guests were Manic Street Preachers, which is why I was probably there. I loved Manics at the time. And then I also loved the headliner, which was The Verve that was around Urban Hymns time. So very much like end of Britpop era, kind of thought this band were class, had missed Oasis a few years previous, but had seen Oasis in, well, not the Aviva, but Lansdowne Road, as it was called then. And then 3 years later, I actually went to see the U2 Elevation Tour. And I don't remember why. I just was like, oh, we should go because U2 are U2. And like, you know, I don't regret it. I don't regret it at all. It was great. They were brilliant on the night. But looking at the lineup, I don't remember Coldplay played, apparently. Red Hot Chili Peppers, I remember them playing because they played Higher Ground and they just left a big impression because they were such a good live band. Relish played, Kelis played. I don't remember her playing. And JJ72, which I was a big fan of at the time. And then I realized, I'm just looking on Wikipedia today, a second gig took place a week later with U2 playing a headline. And I think you'd be a bit like annoyed if you picked this. Like, So the first one, 25th of August 2001, had U2, Kelis, Coldplay, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and JJ72. The second one, on 1st of September 2001, had Moby, Ash replacing Foo Fighters, Nelly Furtado, The Walls, Dara, and U2. So not quite as long-lasting, perhaps, but and certainly Ash replacing Foo Fighters. I can't remember why that was. Maybe it was illness or whatever it was at that point. But Moby with Ardal O'Hanlon, what it says.
Moby with Ardal O'Hanlon?
I don't remember that. What?
So the year with the Manics and Robbie and the Verve, am I right in thinking that it was sort of generally understood, or the kind of sentiment at the time was that Robbie sort of played the Verve off the stage?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you remember of Robbie?
I remember how impressive he was. I remember how much of a showman he was. I remember how good the band were. I remember how he played Millennium, and I was like, wow, that's amazing, that song. I was like, and then it became this massive hit. Or maybe it was just out at the time. I can't remember exactly. But yeah, it was a really, like, I went going being the indie rock kid going, oh, can we see the Seahorses and Manic Street Preachers in the Verve, and kind of going, Rob Williams is fucking brilliant.
This Robbie Williams guy,
he will go far.
He's got a future ahead.
Yeah, really good. And I remember the U2 gig being particularly good as well a few years later. So, but I do remember it, the pain in the arse. And it is kind of, when I think of Slane, I think of it as kind of the classic. It's the first rite of passage for a lot of people. I think of shitty dehydrated hamburgers with a sliver of some weird processed cheese and a very small dry dollop of tomato ketchup and one of those old burger buns. You know the burger van I'm thinking of. It's red and white and it's long, and you really don't, and the chips are overly salty because they want you to drink more booze. And Getting Out was one of, I think, the year in 1998, we lost a friend of mine afterwards in the crowd, and ended up by a service station, a petrol station for about 6 hours with one of my friend's dads. Like, obviously no mobile phones at that point, waiting for him to turn up from somewhere.
Of course.
Couldn't obviously leave Slane without him. He's just sitting in a car. We went to the designated point. He never arrived. About 4 or 5 in the morning, like what, the gig finishes at 11? Yeah. He arrived having been picked up by the guards and brought to the local Garda station, even though he knew where this point was supposed to be. Anyway, the guards wouldn't let him because he was 16 or something. They wouldn't let him go on his own.
Oh,
so basically, that's what, because you have to, obviously, you know now, you have to wait for all the traffic to leave before you can come back up.
Oh,
and if
I know.
If you're walking,
oh, I know
you
now.
Have to walk fucking ages. So you can just actually end up walking through the town. I think the thing about Slane is it suited its purpose many, 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 many years ago. Now it's got the nostalgia, cool indie, not indie factor, but like big headliner factor. But it is a very small bottleneck around the Slane Castle itself. You're coming from Dublin, the Dublin side. It's very much like there's that bridge over and there's just a traffic at a standstill that I remember. Now you can tell me what it was like this year for Harry Styles.
Sure. A lot of things that you mentioned there haven't changed. The food is not great. We got Nadia and I shared a meal deal from Burger Van. So she had a burger. I had like what amounted to maybe like 6 little chips. And we got like a bottle of water and it was $16.99, which, you know, we both nearly fainted. We arrived in, it was kind of drizzly, which was unfortunate. And it felt a bit miserable. As soon as I walked in, Annie Mac was on the stage. She was playing Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. And I was like, here we go. And, you know, you've had that long walk to actually get to the place where the gig is on, which I didn't mind, actually, because it was a really nice atmosphere. Kind of just all the like families and like groups of girls just all excited for Harry. Feather boas everywhere. It was actually a nice enough walk. Arrived in, and it was only then that I sort of took in the amount of people that were there. And when I say you couldn't move, like at the back where the food is, where, you know, it, everywhere was jammed, like 80,000 people, my eye, like and anyone I spoke to there was saying like, there's no way this is 80,000 people. I've been to Slane, like at this gig, that gig, blah, blah, blah. This is the busiest I've ever seen it. And I was like, right, okay. So we sort of, yeah. So I think the crowd was a big factor, like the type of people that were there, which was like vast, vast majority women. I'd say like 80 to 85% were girls. And the 20 to 25% of men that were there were either dads or boyfriends or like gay guys. Like there was no macho element at this gig. And that was such a, it was such a different atmosphere to like music festivals, or because it feels like a music festival when you're there. It's kind of designed to feel like a music festival. And it was such a different environment, and it was so lovely for it. Like it was a very wholesome sort of, just everyone's just so excited. Like I spoke to a few families who were bringing their daughters to their first gig. You know, there was a few people, it was their first Slane, like myself. But it also did feel very, very crowded. If I'd brought a child with me, I probably would have regretted it, in terms of the wait for Harry to come on. So the support acts were Annie Mac, as I said, as we were walking in. She played some great tunes, which kept us company while we were queuing for the burger van. Then there was, we missed one of Harry's, one of the members of Harry's band. I can't remember his name now, but he played before Annie Mac. And then Wet Leg were on, who were great. We sort of heard them while we were queuing for the bar. I think in the Garda press conference in the lead up to Slane, they said that they were serving less alcohol at this Slane than previous ones. And I can understand why they would do that, but also like women drink alcohol too. And, you know, it's not all families bringing their kids. They could have done with one more bar, I'd say. So yeah, I heard a bit of Wet Leg. They were really good, like a really good command of the crowd. They had this thing where they do this scream so that everyone can get all their negative energy out. But we didn't quite hear that that's what was happening. So we were just chatting in the bar and then all of a sudden there's like 80,000 people screaming and we were like, what's going on? But it was, yeah, it was really good. And then Inhaler were on, who were also really good, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think I have like a little soft spot for really? Inhaler. I feel like if I was 15, I'd really like them. Like they'd be my cool little band or whatever. And they seem to really have a lot of fans.
Yeah, they do. Well, you know, do you see their latest gig announcement? Three Arena.
Yeah, Three Arena. Yeah,
so, I mean...
Is it two nights they're doing?
Yeah, I just saw one.
I think I saw something about them doing two nights, so but...
Missed it a bit, but yeah, November. I mean, Blossoms and Soak.
Crazy. Yeah, mad. Yeah, a lot of Inhaler like merchandise, people like young girls, like kind of teenage girls between 15 and 18 wearing like Inhaler t-shirts. People buying Inhaler merch there, which
I'm
is
glad
really
it makes
cool.
sense to me now. I'm like, who's listening to Inhaler? It's young kids. All right, grand.
The kiddos. That's, yeah. The
it
kids.
Just helps me understand a bit more.
Yeah, all the teen girls fancy Bono's son, which I think is really cute because it must be like their moms remembering that they fancied Bono back in the day or they thought he was really cool or whatever. So I think, yeah, there's a kind of a cute legacy there. So yeah, so we sort of stayed like on the hill. For anyone who doesn't know, Slane is, you know, it's always referred to as this natural amphitheater. So the stage is at the bottom of this hill that kind of, you know, comes up in like a kind of a semicircle around the front of it. And then behind it is just the most beautiful like trees and like just this gorgeous setting for this stage. Like it looked so beautiful, and then you had the castle over on the right as well, and it was great. And so we sort of hung back on the hill a bit. We didn't want to go down where things were too like squished and crowded, and I think the sound wasn't great where we were on the hill. Like we had been in kind of two different spots. We'd been further down and then we had to go to the bathroom and then came back. And we stayed up a little bit further back. So for the kind of more acoustic songs, the sound wasn't that great, but for the more kind of like the louder, more upbeat songs, the sound was fine. It was grand. And then with the screens behind Harry, we kind of like stylized stuff, but also him on the screens. And then you had a screen either side. For people that are far back to look at, that just follows Harry. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I should talk about how Harry did. He was amazing. Like he was like, whatever my expectations were going into it, like he really rose to meet that stage. You could tell from how he was talking about being there that he knew and understood that playing Slane is like a landmark in your career, that it's important and that it's important to Irish people as well. And his band were fantastic. He was quite funny. He did his three bananas for a pound, two bananas for a euro thing.
I saw something about it. What was that about?
So back when One Direction were doing some kind of like radio interview tour or whatever, whenever the X Factor was over, there was an interview. I think it was him and Niall, and I think it was maybe on like it was on some radio station. I'm not sure if it was in Ireland or in the UK, but it was him and Niall, and Niall had taught him like two bananas for a pound, three bananas for a euro, in that accent, and he did it on that radio station like what 12 years ago or whatever. But there was two girls right there in the front dressed up as bananas, and he pointed at them and then did it. So anyone who was like a One Direction fan back in the day was just like, oh, we've come full circle. He shouted out Mullingar. He was like, sing it out for Mullingar. He played a medley of three One Direction songs. He played Best Song Ever, What Makes You Beautiful, and another one, which was just like, Nadia and I burst into tears. Like we were in bits during that bit. It was just so lovely and wholesome. A few dads around me started to get into it at that stage. They were like, oh yeah, I know these songs. These are good songs. I've heard this playing out of my daughter's bedroom. I like this. But like he was just so he was amazing. Like, we couldn't see him. Like, we were watching the screens and he was just, he was wearing a glittery jacket. So he was just this like little piece of glitter that would occasionally like move around the stage and we'd be like, there he is, which was great. So yeah, the show itself was fantastic. And there was a sign on the way in. Someone else took a photo of it. I didn't see it. That said something like, by coming into this venue, you, what do you call it? Like you give your permission for the artist to like film you or whatever. And so I have my hopes up that it was filmed for like a kind of a concert film or something. Or some people have been some like Harry fans have been speculating online that he's making like a tour film of the Love on Tour. So I imagine we'd feature quite prominently. He played Wembley then. So I think Slane was his biggest ever gig. And then when he played Wembley, that topped it. And it was like only 2 days later, which I'm annoyed about. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. So that was the show. But yeah, okay. So the best of times, the worst of times is Slane. Like, I don't want to like complain, but like, there's just a lot about it that like small tweaks and it could make the experience so, so much better. One is, as I wrote in my newsletter, the plastic cups, guys, like, I'm sorry, but you can't still be serving people plastic cups, at a gig that size. Like, it is irresponsible. It's unethical. It's horrible for the environment and also just for the immediate environment. Like, we arrived in at half four and the place was already covered. Like, the ground was already covered in those like horrible plastic cups just being like stomped into the earth. It was horrendous. There weren't enough bins as well. And there was no kind of like even attempt to encourage people to recycle any plastic. You couldn't bring in your own reusable bottle. So what's the point in having the refillable banks? If I tried to throw my chili bottle at Harry from where I was standing, you know, they'd give me an Olympic gold medal if I had hit him. You know, like, there's no safety issue for the performer for me, yeah, like having this with me. So little things like that. Also, like the price of the food, the fact that you're not technically allowed to have food.
Did you bring your sandwiches on the way down? That's what I want. That's what we all want to know.
Oh yeah, I brought my sandwiches on the way down. Had my little sandwich, and I had a big breakfast before I left. So I was very, very responsible. But yeah, and in the Irish Times, not in the review of it, but there was another piece that was written in the Irish Times, in which the reporter was talking to a woman who had like a big picnic blanket, and she'd managed to bring in, I think, like feta cheese and like crackers. Ooh. And stuff. So I was like, okay, it can be done. So I'll bear that in mind if I ever go to Slane again. But then, yeah, leaving was like, the walk through Slane Village was amazing. And the walk past, like, you know, the kind of residential area and the houses that you walk past. So they had like the fireworks going off, like for basically the whole time we were walking, they were doing like a fireworks show. Everybody who lives in the residential area were like out on in their front gardens, sitting on chairs and like waving at us. And like the atmosphere and the environment leaving was so, so lovely until we got to the car park. The car park, now it was what's that thing, Lord of the Flies. So we wanted to get a bus, right, and the buses had sold out. And you know, that's another issue. You can't encourage people to take public transport if there isn't enough public transport. That's not necessarily like solely the responsibility of the organizers, but you know, there's a conversation to be had there about like providing enough access for people to make like ethical climate decisions when it comes to getting to and from gigs, especially when they're far away and there's no other way of getting there. But so we got dropped off and picked up. Dropping off was a nightmare because there was no signs anywhere and we just had to keep like stopping on the road and asking other cars where they were going. And then eventually we had like a convoy of cars who were following us and we didn't know where we were going. And we were like hanging out the window and being like, what did that guard say to you? And then someone else would come along and be like, no, you can't go down this road. We tried that road and they said to go this way. So it was like, it was madness, but like a bit of fun. But on the way out, it was like, it took us so long to for the person that was picking us up to actually get into the car park. He was on the other side of a hedge, and he had to drive around, which took him an hour and 15 minutes to get into the car park. But whereas if we just walked outside the little exit, we could have got into the car and left, but they weren't letting anyone leave. There was a family there who had a child with them who lived three doors down from that exit, but weren't allowed to leave that exit on foot because it was too dangerous, the Gardaí told them. But they'd entered that way on foot and nobody told them that they couldn't get back out. So they were like, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to get home? And they were like, oh, you'll have to get someone to come and pick you up. And they were like, there is no one to pick us up. So I saw them asking people in cars to just drop them, you know, like 300 meters down the road. And they eventually got like a man who had enough room in a kind of like a minibus. And he brought them out. But like, madness. Like, and then, you know, the way you have like lanes in a car park that you can like drive on, or like around the spaces. But like the only thing that was like showing you that these were the lanes to drive on were the cars that were parked. But when those cars leave the car park, there's nothing. So then you have like, and I'm not even joking, like 12, 13 lanes of traffic all converging on this one exit that had this like these like two guys at the exit trying to like manage all of this and all trying to get out the same way. It took us, we arrived at the car park. Gig ended at 10:30, arrived at the car park maybe 10:10. We got out of the car park at 1:20. Oh. And then once we were out, it was like there was no traffic on the way. It was fine. But it was hell. We were very lucky because like it wasn't raining. It was pretty warm until like 1 a.m. and then it suddenly got quite cold and people started to get like quite annoyed then. But it was hell. It was awful.
It is hard to get that amount of people out. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I went to Twitter like to see if people were talking about the car park, and there was like a few people talking about it, but then I realized like nobody has any service there, so no one's like online giving out about it because like we can't even make phone calls there, let alone, or like it's very, very patchy, let alone go on Twitter and complain about it. But yeah, it was like I said, best of times, worst of times. I don't think I'd go to Slane again. Like there was so much about it that I loved. Like I said, I really enjoyed the walk there and back. A lot of people hated it. I thought it was lovely. It was a nice kind of, it was nice to kind of take a half an hour to 40 minutes to walk with your pal and talk about the gig and talk about the day. And
yeah, I remember that walk being very nice.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah. It was lovely. It was really nice, especially going through the village and like chatting with the locals, and they're kind of in the spirit of it and everything, and the fireworks are going off. Like it was beautiful. It was really, really lovely. But I think the overcrowding was a major, major factor in me like probably not going again. Like my biggest upside was the crowd. The crowd were incredible. Like everyone was just really nice to each other. Everyone was helping each other. I swore to myself that I wouldn't go for like a boy gig, as I described it to Harry. I was like, I love the Arctic Monkeys, for example. Like hell would I go to Slane if the Arctic Monkeys were playing, or like any sort of like band that would draw a more laddish crowd, just because it's so packed and it's such a long day. And it's like, Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think it's planned very well, even though they have like the beauty of the site and the legacy of the site and all these things. There's just little things they could do to make it a much more enjoyable experience. And if they do want to open it up and make it more of a family event, then they should do things like allow you to, you know, like bring in your supplies for the day. I absolutely understand not being allowed to bring in alcohol. Like, I'm not saying anything like that, but you know, your little sandwiches and, you know, and like just little things that make it feel more like you're not having yourself shaken down after paying 97 quid for the ticket and then going in and just being like, oh, okay, so if I want like just like basic stuff, this is all very, very expensive kind of stuff. So yeah, that was the kind of general vibe. It was beautiful. I'd probably go again if like I was thinking about like who would have to play for me to go again, and I reckon it would be one of the two Pauls, being McCartney or Simon. And other than that, I don't think, no matter how much I love the person, I don't think it would be worth the crowd being as sort of unorganized and free for all. There was also a real, I know the Safe Gigs Ireland were there. I didn't see anyone around while I was there. They wear the pink Hi-Vis, yeah, jackets, and you can report things to them. They're like, they're like a safe space and a person. If there's any instances of harassment or if you're feeling panicked, anything like that at all, you can go and talk to Safe Gigs Ireland, who are amazing. They do brilliant work. But there was a real lack of like a presence in terms of security or paramedics. Like, there was a girl while we were queuing for food who fainted, and there was a paramedic maybe like 200 people away from us, and they couldn't get through to us. So there was another woman, thankfully, who was a doctor, and she came over and was helping the girl. And she was dehydrated, and it was just the heat and the crowd, and she was fine then. But the fact that paramedics couldn't get through the crowd was an issue for me. So there was a lack of presence of like organizers or security and things like that I feel like it just made me a little bit uneasy, given how many children were there, the size of the crowd, the fact that it's a long day. That sort of thing made me a bit uneasy. And Nadia and I were talking about all these kinds of things while we were there, and we were like, God, we're old. Like, if we were 20 or 21, like would we be looking out for like, we'd probably be looking out for security guards, but for like completely different reasons. But now we're like, it's very lack of security. It's very busy, very busy. But yeah, that's the vibe, yeah, report on Harry Styles. It's late.
Well, thanks. Best of time, I mean, yeah, time. Like I said, I mean, it's been so long since I went to a single concert of 80,000 people or anywhere close to it. It's impossible to even imagine it now. I mean, they obviously used to do it all the time. I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'm going to see the Prodigy soon for the crack in a couple of weeks.
Where are they playing?
Fairview Park. It's not big. But then I've seen the gigs from St. Anne's Park. I've heard mixed reports, but that's all pulp last week. No, I didn't go. Friends went, said even getting in and out there is kind of a pain in the arse. I'm not sure if I want to do, like, I'm just not in that mode anymore, and that's fine. And
I'd kind of forgotten what a big gig
is. Yeah, I mean, it can be fun.
Like, to me, the Three Arena is a really big gig these days. And I mostly sit when I'm there. Like, I'm not usually down on the
I guess, you know, and the other thing about what you mentioned earlier about the, you know, lack of facilities, because it's a one and done day, a lot of that is just not set up because, you know, you go to one spot or you stick around one spot and you throw your stuff in the ground, it all gets cleared up afterward and that's it. And, you know, I mean, fair point about not plastic, but yeah, anything else. I mean, like, not garden recycling kind of should be done. It is the big gig. It's kind of nice that it's still going, but it's kind of mad that it, you know, it still has the same problems as it always has.
And just one last thing on it. Every single person who we met, like, you know, checking your ticket or searching your bag or anything like that, were like as excited, if not more excited, to be there than the people who were attending. They were like amazing. They were like part of the vibe. They were part of the buzz. They were so, so nice, really helpful. The security men and, like, you know, people that are kind of like guiding you in your directions were just there, like on the long walk up. they'd be like, just 10 more minutes to go, girls, like, keep going. And like, they're like supporting you, like in your like pilgrimage to Slane. And that was a really big part of like how much I enjoyed the walk up. They were, they were so into it. Like they were so, so lovely. And yeah, just everyone was just like on the right buzz. And I loved that. I really, really loved that. And I hope all the kiddos that went had a good time. Actually, if anyone's listening who brought a young person to Slane this year to see Harry, I'd love to hear from you on the email or on Twitter or whatever, because I'm really interested in like what the perspective of a parent was, or like if your child had a good day, if they enjoyed the experience. And
yeah, that's podcast at 909.com if you want to email us any thoughts.
Yes,
on that,
please.
You mentioned Sir Paul McCartney there. Did you see the any headlines about him this week?
No.
The Beatles, because we did an AI episode recently. Obviously, I think the AI stuff's kind of like settled down a bit in the way that, you know, it's nice not to hear about it right now. But, you know, it continues to be happening in the background, and the initial fervor about it all is kind of died down. But yeah, apparently there might be a new Beatles song this year because of AI technology. I mean, technology has allowed them to extract a vocal take from John Lennon from an old demo, and possibly will be turning that into a release of one Beatles song. This is what Paul McCartney told BBC this week. He was talking to the BBC. He said, well, it's a very interesting thing. It's something we're all tackling at the moment, trying to deal with what it means in terms of AI. I don't hear that much because I'm not on the internet that much. Fair play to you. But people will say to me, oh yeah, there's a track where John's singing one of my songs, and it isn't. It's just AI. So all that is kind of scary but exciting because it's the future.
You can't tell. I'm sorry, but like his friend, that's his friend who died in extremely tragic circumstances. You can't be like, here's an audio recording of your friend who died, and then him being like, oh, it's just AI. That's so cruel. Like, no, stop it. Stop it. Let people live. Like, leave Paul alone. Paul does not need to grapple with the ethics of AI. He is in his 80s. He was a Beatle.
Well, he goes on to say, I mean, in terms of like Get Back, Peter Jackson used some sort of AI technology to extract some of the vocals from a cassette. So he has familiarity with them and so understands the principle of it. So he says, so when we came to make what would be the last Beatles records, it was a demo that John had that we worked on. We had just finished it up. It will be released this year. We were able to take John's voice and get it pure through this AI so that we could mix the records so that you would normally do. People say it's a song called Now and Then that was originally recorded in 1978. But yeah, Sir Paul, another Beatles song is going to appear at some point this year. So that's kind of the vibe there.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm thinking of Paul McCartney, you know, the old man, but also like Paul was very much an early adopter back in the 60s. And in the 70s of like new music technologies and stuff. And so if it is something that he wants to explore, then fair enough. But also
not needed.
Like,
but anyway, yeah.
Not needed. And also, yeah, there's a discomfort there with using AI to kind of fill in the blanks, as it were, with somebody who's passed. You know, it's a bit strange.
And speaking of filling in the blanks, we talked recently about the Ed Sheeran copyright case where his song was... Well, he was successful in that case where he was up against the song from Marvin Gaye's estate, Let's Get It On, accused of basically copying it. And the thing about it is there's a really good New Yorker article that I want to recommend, because I think if you haven't read it, you should. A case for and against Ed Sheeran. The song, it goes into depth about how that actually worked in terms of the court case, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. Thinking Out Loud is the Ed Sheeran song. Talks about recording it and releasing it and, you know, the similarities and also the difficulties in which it takes to bring a copyright case to court and how that works. So two things that I would recommend and that I took away from this. Firstly, Ed Sheeran missed his grandmother's own funeral to testify at this court case. That's number one. And a curious thing, because of the way that copyright law works, the defense couldn't use the original Marvin Gaye recording of Let's Get It On, but only approximate MIDI versions with a robotic voice. It was so weird. So here's the bit. What? Here's a bit from it. In both the, so it talks about the Blurred Lines case and Stairway to Heaven cases. In both Blurred Lines and Stairway to Heaven cases, the jury was not permitted to listen to any pre-1978 recording. So there's a rule, basically, any song before 1978 cannot be played as a recording because the copyright is actually tied to the written composition. But any song after January 1st, 1978, sound recording are admissible in court. So you had this weird situation where Ed Sheeran's song could be played as is, but the Marvin Gaye song in court could not be played for the jury. So,
but that completely removes the concept of like timbre.
Yeah.
From
so copyright. Listen to this, right?
That's
so
crazy.
The jury had to rely on 5 pages of sheet music for Let's Get It On, a skeletal transcription that contains lyrics, melodies, chords, and a notation of where the syncopated beats fall. Gaye's piano and the Funk Brothers' addition to the grooves, such as the bass line, weren't on the deposit copy. Gaye, who didn't read music, probably never even saw the transcription. Sheeran can't read music either, a fact that he readily admits on the stand. The only versions of Let's Get It On that the jury could listen to were the experts' MIDI audio files, which were made from the sheet music using musical software and sung by a computer-generated voice. The tinny weedle sound of the synthesized music and the high-pitched android vocal made a classic soul song sound utterly soulless. I was like, I was trying to find a recording of that because I just really wanted to hear it. I was like, I want to hear what the chord version of that is. I want to hear it.
Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On, court version.
I mean, could you just imagine?
But you know what else is kind of that really bothers me about that, actually, is the fact that they use sheet music at all bothers me. This is a jury of people who most likely do not read sheet music. It's two artists who don't read sheet music, and yet in musicology, in most strands of musicology, there is a priority given to the idea of the written music and the score as being the music itself. Yeah. That I've always like rubbed up against, and there's lots and lots of musicologists like that's a very contested idea in musicology. Yeah. that the score is music, and so to provide scores as the music and not also talk about and like to remove things like timbre, to remove like the bass line, to remove other elements of music that kind of lay people and people who aren't musicians or aren't musicologists like think of as music, is to kind of intellectualize it in a way that can be very, very confusing, very alienating, and doesn't actually reflect how music kind of functions for everyday people. And that's the point of this copyright lawsuit. It's that, you know, oh, when people hear this, they'll think it's, but it's completely ignoring how music functions in people's lives and just intellectualizing it to this space where people are going to go, oh yeah, well that does look like it's the same melody. And that's not fair.
Yeah. John C. Brooks' New Yorker piece about this does make it clear that, maybe there is an actual issue with using sheet music, and also that sheet music is mainly applies to classical music and doesn't actually serve modern R&B and soul and black root music, essentially. But also says that, you know, in music copyright trials, the way this works is the two kinds of people, expert listeners like musicologists, and then lay ones decide how it works. It's called the Arnstein test. So a really interesting article if you want to read that. I think it's from the Music Issue from a couple of weeks ago, a week or so ago. Really good piece, interactive bits with the songs there as well, so you can hear some of the things. I think it's just really interesting how...
Drop the MIDI version, guys.
I was hoping I could find it so I could play it. I was just like, this would be hilarious to hear this.
There's probably some software we could run it through, but also, you know, the ethics of that are probably...
Yeah. But look, I was just trying to find out. That'd be fun to hear that. And speaking of things I read this week, and I have to give a shout out to Hot Press, who actually wrote something very interesting this week about the cost of rising cost of touring in the US. There was a piece by Sandra Black on hotpress.com this week. It talks about how, no, I'd heard about this before, but it's a good piece that lays it out. So we've been talking a lot about the rising cost of touring, and you know, when we talked about it before, it's a combination of inflation, cost of living, Brexit, all these other things that are affecting it. But you know, and there's a lot of talk in our Discord. If you're interested in joining that, like it's patreon.com/909, and join our community there. But it was talking about, say, the PJ Harvey tickets for this week, which were going about 70 quid plus for the Olympia, and the point was made that based off inflation, it's actually not that much more than the last time she played was like 16 years ago in the same venue. But here's an example of something that could be really negative, and it could affect all of us in terms of the bands we are going to go see, and the bands that will be able to leave this country, which is obviously, you know, we're a small island. Bands need to travel in order to make a living. But what
bands I can hate.
And so the US Department of Homeland have proposed a significant hike in the fees to be paid for touring visas. It's called a P visa. I remember having a chat with somebody recently about this. They currently cost $460 per person. But the proposal will put this up to $1,615 per person, meaning that just to get over there with a group of four people, you're talking about $1,600 by four. So it's 260% increase of the cost, which would just mean people won't be able to afford to go to tour and play in the US at all. And then there's talk then that, the European authorities will respond tit for tat and kind of introduce visas for US because they've done it to us. So it could mean that like US bands won't be able to tour here. The kind of bands that you would hope to see in the Workman's Club will not be visiting here. So it's kind of all like falling apart in a way. Like international touring has been falling apart for a couple of years now, but now it's just really...
What is the, like, what's the justification for
them?
The US,
they say it's over staff shortages and stuff like that is the main reason. High demand, combination of high demand and staff shortages. And they, I think this is kind of like,
sorry, in the visa
in the US citizen and immigration department
in the homeland.
Right. So you say they are trying to reduce the workload, but essentially that means like you're making less viable for artists, therefore making less work for yourself. So you could get into this weird zone where like the only people that are playing countries are the people who live near it, and you'll never unless you're massive. Like,
yeah.
You know, obviously Beyonce is taking a massive tour around the world at the moment. People like Harry Styles will be able to
here.
Do. Yeah, but I mean, that's it. You maybe probably didn't do it because it, like we're a small island and there's lots of different, our cost of insurance is very high as well. As of course, that's another reason that's been touted by promoters here or why people aren't coming here. So it does happen a lot. We haven't seen Rosalia come to Ireland yet, for example.
And then for any artists that do travel to the US, like they'll have to pass that cost on to...
Well, it just like, makes it incredibly hard to do so. I mean, you're talking about putting up $15,000 easily plus, depending on how many members you have in your band. I think the Scratch manager is mentioned in this. And somebody's child, Keane Godfrey, we actually met Keane at Great Escape and had a brief chat with him about this. And he said, you know, it ended up costing them a lot of money just to get to South by Southwest because they got the visas. Sometimes people just don't get the visa, just go because they can't afford to play the... You're talking like...
Yeah, and there's only
fees
so
paid
much
to lawyers, 20 grand.
Yeah.
$20,000 to get over there to play one showcase. You know, it's a lot of money and it's not something that most people have lying around. Like we've talked about streaming and, you know, how much little revenues comes from there. Where are bands on the way up trying to get over that precipice? How are they going to get $20,000? It's just going like, yeah, no, I have this money. It's actually fine.
Even doing something like South by Southwest or, you know, these kind of festivals or shows that can break you. Like if you don't have the money, like it's a parity issue in terms of like, you know, musicians who have a bit of money, who maybe come from more affluent backgrounds, might be able to pay those things. Musicians who don't won't be able to pay that sort of money and are therefore kind of locked out of, you know, like major opportunities.
Yeah. So it's one to watch and to keep an eye on because, I mean, we still have, there's no actual solution still in terms of like Brexit, what happens with the Irish bands going there. There's kind of a, it's not being fully enforced is what Thorsten from God is an Astronaut saying. That's back tracks with everything else that we've heard from bands who go there and bands who, well, they should actually admit that they're bringing stuff over, because you have to, it's this convoluted process where you have to list all the equipment that you bring over and how much it costs, and then they, you have to give them money. I think Gillaband talked about it recently. It's a minefield and it's a mindfuck. And
like for artists who are moving within the European Union, has there been a rise in costs for them?
Like, I mean, the rise in costs are the same as any other, just like cost of living and transport,
just general kind of inflation. And
so now it's bad, but definitely easier place to go than anywhere else at the moment. So definitely one to keep an eye on. And another thing I wanted to mention before we go on this very summary podcast is the Why Not Her report, which came out this week. Irish Times piece about it from Linda Coogan Byrne and Margaret E. Ward. Now, Why Not Her is a campaign basically looking at the gender disparity on radio play every year. And every June, they release a data report based off what the radio stations are playing in terms of breakdown of gender and further equality and inclusivity categories. And so I'm just going to...
Yeah, this year's is gender and ethnicity, isn't it?
So it's basically compiled a report of the top 20 playlists and songs. So here are some top line stuff that from this year's Why Not Her report. This year's data reveals international acts and white male artists continue to dominate the airwaves. And that's a big surprise to anyone. Only the nation's national broadcaster, RT1, has booked the trend by consistently highlighting artists of both genders almost equally on its playlist over the 4 years. This is from the directly from the report. Latest Why Not Her report shows that musicians born or based in Ireland who are women or people of colour still get less airtime. Only 6% of the top 100 songs on Irish radio were by Irish female artists, including collaborations with male artists, down from 13% in 2022. When you drill down to the top 20, things are even worse. A number of local radio stations have playlists that were between 95% and 100% dominated by white men. Last year, 2FM top 20 included 80% male artists, and this hasn't changed. More than 98% of the artists featured in the top 100 are already signed by big labels. But even if you're a female artist represented by a big label, there's no guarantee you'll be treated equally in terms of radio time. Example here is in 2001, Melda May became the first Irish woman to release a number one album in the official Irish charts in 5 years, with 11 past the hour. She received less than 100 plays across Irish radio the week she became number one in Ireland. And then the following week, I think it was Dermot Kennedy got 10 times the amount of plays and knocked her off the top album, number one in country in the Irish charts that the following week. Yeah, so just some of the top line stuff. If you're looking for that, there is a article called Why Not Her. You can see the breakdowns in terms of male and female and how it works in terms of radio stations. You know, this is a perennial thing that seems to happen. You know, I mean, somebody has to take responsibility for making this change, because if you don't, somebody doesn't make a change. I think what seemed to happen is, like, when the report first came out, a lot of radio stations kind of went, oh yeah, maybe we should do something about this, and now they've kind of settled back into their 20% kind of buzz, which is very, very low in some cases. 2FM 20% female, RT Radio 1 60%, even RT Pulse is 35%, RT Lyric FM 40%. Now there's a full Canva thing, obviously that's the national broadcaster, which is where these kind of things should be easily done without commercial issues clouding or you being used as excuses. But yeah, it's still not great in terms of what's been happening. Female artists in terms of Today FM has been actually getting less the last couple of years. It went from 15 to 5 to 10.
I think that's what's especially disappointing about this seeing radio stations downwards that had improved. Yeah, and it really shows that these kinds of conversations, like the first one of these reports came out in 2020, and there was a major conversation had on social media, but also it got a lot of media coverage and kind of mainstream media, and then in 2021, there were a lot of stations that were seen to have made a major improvement. And then that kind of trended again in 2022. But it just shows the importance of kind of continuing to have this conversation, because Linda could have done this report in 2020 and said, that's it. But I think it's really important that she continues. And we all, like, you know, me being in like research community and like journalists and everybody continues to kind of shine a light on this, because if you're not keeping an eye on it, then old habits will kind of slip back in and you mightn't even notice it, yeah. You know? So yeah, it's,
yeah, amazing. I mean, it's good to see that they're still at the, doing the report and like tracking what's been going on. I guess the question is like, what happens next? I mean, because these reports don't have a lasting impact on the actual stations, a temporary blip that gets quickly discarded and back to business as usual. So, I mean, look, as we know, like commercial radio stations especially are not willing to take a risk, and they will say, you know, they'll point to somebody like Jazzy, that Giving Me song as the number one of the movie. It doesn't matter if it's a woman. But, you know, it's like somebody like RT actually really has to step up in this regard. And it's not just like, and they have been very good in terms of like supporting Irish music a lot lately. But there just needs to be more of an actual, you can't be like, oh, well, you actually have to platform this stuff. You actually have to do it to change it. You can't just be like, well, we played the Jazzy song because it was really popular. Like, it doesn't matter who this person is, or where that person is from, or who they are, or what gender they are. But it actually does, because, as we know, it really matters. It really does change things when you can see it, you can be it, all that kind of stuff. It needs to be the kind of thing that just is baked into, especially the national broadcaster. So yeah, that's the perennial discussion about radio and gender parity or disparity. And to close things,
our annual discussion.
And to close things off, I mentioned Moby and Ardal O'Hanlon performed together at Slane. Yeah, so that was because Moby was a massive fan of Father Ted, of course, like anyone with a brain would be. So apparently, Ardal O'Hanlon did a Q&A in New York at a comedy festival once, and Moby turned up and all he was doing was asking really nerdy questions about Father Ted. So the day of Slane, he asked him to come and play My Lovely Horse and come and sing it with him. And Ardal was like, I don't really want to do this because, Ireland are playing Holland in the World Cup qualifier. So he's like, I don't really want to do it. I want to watch the match. So as soon as the match was over, Moby flew him down in a helicopter.
And Dermot Morgan was passing.
I think so, yeah. So he got up. He probably doesn't remember a thing about it. Doesn't remember singing it. There's no video footage of it, anything like that. There's no recollection of it. There's no footage of it, he says. So, yeah. So there you go. Moby and Ardal O'Hanlon. So that's our trip around the houses, our canter around the paddock this week. Yeah. That's it from us, I think, this week. I think we'll just leave it there.
Yeah, loosey goosey summer episode. It's like when the teacher says you can go and we'll do class outside.
Yeah,
today.
I mean, sometimes you need that kind of summer vibe at the moment, I think, as well, because it's so warm.
I think so.
We'll be dipping in and out of things, I think, in the next few weeks, and see how we have some plans. But sure, look, we'll keep it loosey goosey for now. But yeah, if you want to support us, it's patreon.com/909. Come and join us on the Discord there. And Andrea, anything you'd like to add?
You can follow my newsletter. I'm writing it again, which is fun and exciting. Andrea-cleary.ghost.io. And I'll have like a full Slane review this weekend, I believe. No, that's
great.
It.
I'm going to go to a couple of festivals this weekend. I'm at Body and Soul on Friday and Saturday, and then Beyond the Pale with Lumo on Sunday. Looking forward to that. Hopefully, weather will be good. Don't expect it.
How was the boat
party?
Oh,
yeah, we had a Lumo boat party, yes. Yeah, it was really fun.
How was it? It was the day of Slane.
It was, yeah.
Devastated.
Yeah. It was a different vibe than last year. It was kind of a bit more relaxed. I think it was people were just happy being there. It was less windy, less like dancing indoors, which is fine. It seems to fly by. I'd love to make it longer. It was great fun, though. It's a great thing to do. I mean, I haven't done it before. Last year, it was nice to do it again
And does the SS Lumo allow you to bring your own sandwiches?
You could bring your own sandwiches, not just not your own booze. There was plenty of bottles of Prosecco, but
that's good enough
on
for me.
Board. So yeah, it is a great little jaunt to do. Hopefully, we can do it again. Just gonna have to do it again next year. I mean, we'll say it's great fun, but it doesn't make us any money. But it's fun to do. It's fun to
no.
No. Yeah,
yeah. It's also difficult for people touring around the waters of Ireland.
Yeah,
as well as trying to travel to America.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That's it from us this week. We talk to you later. That's the Loud Annoying Podcast.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from L.A. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.